welcome to a special edition of the Game Informer Show. I'm your host, Ben Hansen, joined by Andrew Reiner.
Hello.
Matt Miller.
Here I am.
Dan Tack.
Hello.
And Leo Vader in the booth.
Hello.
If you're watching the video version, he's in the booth far away because he's actually in the Oasis, which is the topic of today's podcast. And I know there are people out there that say, this is a gaming podcast. Don't talk about a movie. I don't care how much you love Spielberg. Don't talk about it. But Ready Player One is out this week. It is absolutely worth talking about it. Not only because we're a bunch of big old nerds at this table, but this is one of the, I would argue this is the dorkiest and specifically gamey dorkiest film ever made.
Oh, easily. By a wide margin, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So we all saw it just last night. Miller, much to his chagrin, I've ran over and just grabbed his mouth and kept it shut so that he could not just unload all of his fantastic dorky knowledge about this book and this movie all over us and not save it for the podcast. But now we're here. Let's talk about Ready Player One, you guys. Reiner, what did you think of this film?
It's why I love going to the movies.
Wow. Okay.
Like, it hit all the right notes for me. It was a visual bombardment of just spectacle, like big action set pieces, but then also like more cameos than you could ever see in one show. Like, I probably missed 90% of them.
Yeah.
There'd be a group of like 60 people and I'd focus in on like RoboCop.
I don't think he's exaggerating, by the way. Like,
yeah,
I know that
seriously
sounds like an exaggeration, but I would agree. There's it would take many, many viewings, and on those viewings, pausing every 10 to 15 seconds to get all the references.
Like, if you like that aspect of Wreck-It Ralph, this makes Wreck-It Ralph look like a joke.
Or,
it's absurd.
Cabin in the Woods, that
right,
shot where
yeah
it pulls
yes
back and you see all the creatures.
Yeah.
That's like most of this film.
Most of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that it's like one way of doing that. It's not that it's just like in the script. It's in the visuals. It's in the things they talk about. It's in
the
things that are in the background of a scene.
And by the way, we should point out that this is going to be a spoiler-free discussion.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And then back half of the show, we're going to dive into spoilers. So don't be worried about spoilers in this section here.
And the other thing, just to kind of finish my early thoughts on it, as a fan of the book, it really surprised me too. Like, they changed a lot of it. And I was, after I saw the film, I didn't know that Ernest Cline also co-wrote this with Zach Penn. So I was like, oh, so he basically got the chance to write the same story twice.
Yeah.
Kind of like George Lucas with Star Wars, if you ever read the early draft of that Dark Horse released.
Yeah.
It was a completely different thing.
I definitely want to dive in deep because I haven't read the book. And Dan, you've read the book. You're a big fan
I
of that one,
have.
Right?
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the book when it came out. They changed a significant amount in the movie, but you know what? Here's the cool thing. I think it all worked out really well.
Oh, good.
And like, the things that they changed, they wouldn't have been as impressive, I don't think, on film. And they instead went with big set piece moments instead of some of that other stuff that was in the book. And
yeah,
they also changed some of the characters around a little bit. But that gets into spoiler territory, I think.
Which we'll definitely get into. Leo Vader, the youngest in the crew. Leo was reacting strongly throughout that entire film. He's sitting right next to me, and I have no read on if he hated this or if it's his favorite movie of all time. Leo, what did you think in the booth there?
It was by far the best graphics card benchmarking software I've ever seen.
See, that's, you know, that's weird to me I guess it actually makes sense that the young guy didn't like it as much as the rest of us old timers.
Typical.
Well, what did you think specifically? Forget your jokes, Leo. Come on, put on your film critic hat. What did you think of this thing?
I didn't like it.
Really?
I didn't like the film.
Wow.
Really? Okay, what didn't you like about it?
I didn't like where the story went or really how it was told. It all felt very predictable, yet at the same time nonsensical. And the cameos didn't really do anything for me. They kind of had to call them out. You know, they couldn't let them land. They had to like say verbally, on the best-selling book.
Well, hang on. We'll get into that. I think there's a lot of stuff that's
going
to get
To be fair to Leo, though, there's ones that are references that he's just, there's no way he would see.
Yes.
Unless you've been like a student of 80s culture.
My issue
forever
wasn't there were too few references I got.
Yeah.
You know, screw all the references. It's still like it's a well-constructed Spielbergian film, right?
I thought
like,
so, yeah.
It's totally an old, like Spielberg has in recent years really gone into that space of like doing these sort of like sober Oscar-tailored
history
movies.
Pieces.
And I'm not faulting these. I mean, he's made some amazing films, but this is much more the kind of movie that he made back in the period that this movie references.
Which is the most amazing thing to me, because this is sort of him doing getting his chance to do a movie that was inspired by him.
Yes.
It's like the snake eating itself kind of craziness.
We were talking about before the movie how it's weird in a way, in a strange way, that this is kind of like a postmodern movie about and he, the creator of this postmodern movie is referencing his own work almost.
But at the same time, kind of sort of stuff he produced, and kind of sort of, if you want to debate that later on, we can, for like cameos, but in theory he stripped out a lot of the Spielberg.
He stays away
book.
From he most of the Spielberg stuff,
except for the stuff he had to put in there, because otherwise it wouldn't have worked.
Well, yeah. Weird, right? It's just a sort of balls to the wall fun movie from beginning to end.
Yeah.
It's one that I never like the term of like when people say like leave your brain at the door, and I don't think this is what that is, but it is a movie that demands you you leave your suspension of disbelief, kind of.
Oh God, we'll get into that.
You have to be willing to suspend your disbelief, I guess would be the better way to say that, and accept that there's a lot of stuff that is convenient and just weird about the way that the plot is going to unfold. And there's a lot of exposition, especially in the first 30 minutes of the movie. It's like a exposition hammer.
VO fest. And then it also picks up more of the plot in the real world than I expected. It's like, oh, we're really spending a lot of time here. I thought it was all going to be just fantastical nonsense.
But with all that said, throughout that time that you're getting the exposition, you're getting such a visual feast of just fun stuff to look at, not just the references, not just the nostalgia stuff, although that is plentiful, but also just creating some really compelling things to look at, right? Like to put it another way, you could mute it and watch the movie, and it would be like a really visually fantastic thing to just watch unfold in front of you.
Yeah.
So in terms of exposition and everything, I agree that it's a little heavy-handed, but I also think that it has to be. Like, when I thought that, when I heard that the book was being adapted to a movie, I'm like, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Right? This is never going to work.
Yeah.
But they did make it work. And yeah, it's a little heavy-handed at times, but you got to figure, not everyone knows, you know, what this movie's about going into it, and you kind of really need explanation to even grasp what the hell is going on. So, I mean, I thought it worked.
As a gamer going into that, like, I was surprised how deep the cuts were.
Oh, my
God,
yes.
I don't want to spoil stuff.
We will.
But, like,
we will later.
But, I mean, it really, like, goes back in time and gets very intensive on what they're talking about and giving you specific details.
This movie was made for this Game Informer staff, I feel like. This
it
crew,
really
maybe in particular,
like
outside
it,
of
yeah.
Leo, who's too so logical. Leo. He's got a heart of gold. But there were even times where I'm like, I'm tapping out. I'm dorked out. Like, you guys got to stop. You got to stop. And that was the biggest battle. You talk about, like, you know, movies about leaving your brain at the door. I feel like this is a movie you have to leave cynicism at the door. Like, because I even caught myself, maybe even out loud a couple times, I was sitting next to Miller, hopefully not too loudly, just like,
come on. I heard you say come on several times.
But then I had to catch myself, like, dude, you know what you signed up for. Just embrace it for fun. This is not a time to be too cool for school. Like, just embrace the dorkiness.
Listen, if a cynical curmudgeon like myself can enjoy this film, and which I absolutely did, I think anybody can. Like, it reminds me of, like, it's not a one-to-one thing, but, like, this feels like a Goonies-style experience with a gaming angle, obviously.
The angle's, like, 270 degrees.
Right. Yes. It's all gaming.
I see your reference is spot on, though. I mean, like, it has that frantic pacing that is really not concerned with logic so much as it is just, like, how are we going to get to the next thing that's just fun? Like, you know what? Now the kids in Goonies are going to go down a water slide that's in the middle.
Yes.
Like if you look at that scene from
Goonies.
Oh, I
want to talk about the water slide in this movie a lot.
if you look at those moments too closely, it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But is it fun to have the water slide scene in the Goonies? Of course it is.
Okay, should we get specific here? Should we break it off and go for spoilers?
Let's take the chains off.
Well, one thing I do want to say is that I didn't expect from this film is how it kind of explored a relationship in virtual reality.
Yeah.
And I think they handled that very well. I think Spielberg and the writers did a great job of outlining the dangers, the fascination of it, and then projecting that onto what actually happens in reality. I thought that was done very well. And that's something that every gamer's gone through, right? Like, hey, I'm really getting to know this guy really well, or this gal, and then where does it go from there?
Right.
Right.
And part of this discussion, maybe this tease a little bit where I would like to move the discussion when we start talking about spoilers, but I also think in the midst of this spectacle that is this crazy blockbuster Spielberg film, there's also some stuff that are some pretty compelling themes that this movie does attempt to explore, around any number of ideas. Most significantly, though, exploring the ideas of like the authorship of our own stories, right? And how we shape our own narratives. There's a lot of that that is explored in this movie. And there's a lot of interesting things it's trying to say about escapism, right? That is more maybe more nuanced than I think many movies try to do, because it's not trying to take every aspect of escapism to task as like, oh, it's terrible. You should always be living in the real world and never try to get away to anything else. But it's also not going completely the other way either.
Right.
And it does that in interesting ways.
Definitely.
Agreed.
All right, it's time to get into specifics here. Let's really dive in deep. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. If you have not seen Ready Player One, don't watch or listen to this.
And you're ruin it.
Honestly, this is one of those things where it's like, oh, I just kind of want to listen to it. Maybe I'll see the film. Like, the surprises are almost everything in this movie. Like, please, please do not watch or listen to this unless you've seen the film and are ready to dive in deep. Because that was the most fun, is just not knowing what to expect. And even watching all those trailers, dissecting all those trailers along the way.
There's certain things they've held back.
It's so smart that they've held certain things back.
Yeah.
Not the final battle. More interesting stuff, which we can get into.
Right.
Okay, the book specifically. I'd love to learn about differences from the book. Like, what are the biggest deviations? Man.
Okay,
you guys...
unless I'm mistaken, it has been a while since I read the book. There was no like the race thing. Wasn't there was like a jealous contest instead?
D&D.
The D&D thing is a major departure.
I
think in a lot of ways you could think about this being the same framework of a story. It's still saying the same things with mostly the same core characters. But almost everything that is the individual scenes and moments is different.
Everything. So,
way more than you would think.
The Atari stuff at the end, is that in the book? With Adventure?
The Adventure thing is still in the book, yeah, as I recall.
I'm trying to remember.
I'm pretty sure it's still in the book.
But a lot of it is very different.
Wow, okay. I just assumed that Chase was in there.
There's still like the barrier. There's still that big battle. It's not Gundam, though. It's Ultraman.
And there's other big robots that also show up.
That part was mostly.
I think
the
Voltron
same.
Shows up.
Well, they just mentioned. I think it's just like a sentence
in the book, by the way.
A comma. Yeah. It's like, and Voltron, comma, yeah. And this guy, comma.
I mean, that's really what it
given
was.
Readers no idea who they are if they don't know.
The book over the years has following the book's progress, by the way, and I'm not going to dwell on this too much, but I think it's relevant to what we're talking about with this movie, has been an interesting thing to watch because there were. I think most of us who read at this table read it pretty early and got excited about it because it was so weird and it was so rooted in this like this necessity of understanding the references that it was making, and like it didn't care about introducing you to, let's say, Voltron. It just threw that in there. And if you didn't know what Voltron was, well, the book was just going to kind of go on. And over the time since then, I think a lot of people have come to criticize the book for some of that stuff, and for stuff that people see as I don't know, maybe not being as descriptive or as explaining itself better. But for those of us who read it early on, I think that was kind of what was sort of charming about it.
His audience was the people that grew up with this stuff, right?
Not some blockbuster audience, but originally it was a book written just like, you know what, this is the stuff I care about, and the people who might maybe read this book might also really get a kick out of just reading all this stuff smashed together.
And Spielberg was one of those people who really got a kick out of it.
To bring it to a mass audience.
Much like the arc of, you know, people seems like turning on the book in a weird way and people just tearing it to shreds now. I wonder what the evolution of this movie is going to be. I think this movie is going to be a very easy movie to make fun of 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Like, it is going to age poorly, but that's not diminishing the fun and just the batshit insanity of this movie. This movie is the most batshit thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There's a
best
lot
thing you've ever seen. That's
it's
a
up there.
Much.
It's really out there.
It's
a blockbuster. It really
it's
is
insane.
Like, which
Spielberg?
I think is great. Yeah. Like, I can't believe. Like, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the movie because I did not know that. I thought it was going to be extremely difficult to translate, even with Spielberg's deft hand.
Well, I think the smartest thing they did is they diverged completely from the '80s. You know, that is one decade that's covered, but you also have Overwatch in there. Yeah.
It's just total
you
pop
have stuff
culture now.
Through all the decades, right?
I was very confused about this lore. So it is through all decades, but they just focus on the 80s because Halliday loved the 80s.
The original book focuses specifically on the 80s. And the idea that in the 2040s, that there's been this revival that is largely driven by this game creator, Halliday, who was so obsessed with the 80s that he created a world where all the stuff that he loved from the 80s was made manifest.
But now you can make whatever you want.
Right. But now that it's everything, doesn't that kind of fall apart? Like, watching this movie, I'm like, what? This would be like if we were obsessed with the 40s and if there was no pop culture beyond the 40s. No, like, I don't know what the f*** is going on.
Simply added everything to the Oasis as like the rule, but they still put a focus on Halliday's memories and Halliday's life as the keys to cracking to getting to the end of the game.
Yeah, the rule is you could be whatever you want, create whatever you want, right? So if you're a fan of Overwatch today or from the 2010 era, you could make that. And that's what we see in that film. Okay. We see Tracer.
Why was Columbus booming then? I didn't understand that idea.
But because it's where he'd made the game.
So people just move there and lived
they don't focus on that, but that is the explanation given in the book. Or also, in the movie anyway.
And they talk about society falling apart.
Yeah.
Very briefly, in a kind of clever way about one particular resource drying up.
Yeah.
But that is just kind of a telltale sign of like the world is in trouble.
Yeah,
people are escaping.
We get the reference of the corn syrup riots, I think.
Yeah.
Is really cool. I think something that was brought up here that I referenced in the earlier part of the conversation that I want to focus in on is that change from 80s culture to talking about the creation of anything that you can imagine is, I think, one of the most significant things about the film and what it's trying to talk about. I said before that I think one of the central themes here is one of authorship and of sort of how you tell your own story. And I think they really double down on that in the script and maybe Ernest Cline was part of that in the way that he rewrote this for film. But there is this overriding sense of all of the characters trying to find a way to tell their own story and to kind of both be authors of their own destiny and also how they like represent that story to the world around them. That's shown off through, you know, most significantly in that final reveal about like the Adventure 2600 game, right?
Yeah.
The focus that they put on that and the idea of like finding that Easter egg where Robinette just wanted people to know who he was.
Who developed the game again? I forget. I wish the game told me or the film told me repeatedly.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, like it's maybe a little heavy-handed at it, but like that is
so cool.
That's the way that the movie drives home the point that they've been talking about throughout. It's about Halliday and how he told his story, right? How he represented himself in the world, but who he really was inside and who he didn't really understand who he was. You've got basically the entire world at this point that is representing themselves through avatars and through, you know, things that aren't really who they are, and trying, everybody sort of trying to find a way to present themselves in a particular way and give their stories meaning in a world that has largely gone to crap.
Right.
Right. And where nobody really has an individual story anymore.
Especially the aunt.
Especially the aunt.
That was such a bummer, being a huge Spielberg fan, of like, okay, Spielberg family drama, let's go, baby.
Right.
This is peak Spielberg, and this is like, oh, I hate this. This feels completely untrue. I'm not buying this, and it's gone. Okay, so long.
They get through that pretty quick.
That is what happens.
It just, if there just would have been one nice scene, like get the weird, her like boyfriend or whatever out of the picture. Like, what did he add? Some drama about the gloves? Just like have one nice scene between the aunt and the kid. That's enough. But like, instead it's just
Wade calling the guy a noob was probably the highlight of the film.
Oh, yeah. You're right. There's a lot of those
moments.
You
really like that, Leo?
That was pretty important.
I could feel Leo cringing.
Did you really identify with the uncle? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I feel like a noob.
now that we're in spoiler territory, Leo, is there anything that you did like about the movie at all? I want to get that on the table first. Like,
I tried to think of things, and
hold on. What about Ben Mendelsohn as a villain?
Oh,
I thought he worked.
Phil Spencer did a really good job.
The villain from movies.
You're cynical, dude, Dick. I said leave it at the door, man.
He was
Ben Mendelsohn
fantastic.
Is great. He was really good in Animal Kingdom, and now he's typecast, and nobody gets credit for casting him as a villain anymore.
I was definitely a little concerned about it, like originally, like when the movie started. But yeah, he grew on me as the corporate bad guy.
He was great.
What was his avatar? Like, once they said that
corporate bad guy.
No, but once they said that Clark Kent detail, I'm like, oh, he's disguising himself, because that kind of looks like a beefy Clark Kent. It also looks exactly like Senator Armstrong from Metal Gear Rising.
It looks similar.
Which is very confusing.
And I think maybe they were maybe that was going for that.
I honestly expected him to transform into Superman at the end, because didn't he look like a beefy Clark Kent?
Yeah, he could have been. Yeah. Or Black Adam or something.
Yeah.
You know, they also, you had I-Rock as the other sort of antagonist character, which I thought...
Amazing.
I thought it was really great. And
he was hilarious.
A much bigger role than he was in the book. I don't know if he ever got that hands-on with everybody in the book.
But he is like a bounty hunter in the book?
He's just a griefer, right? And I thought they personified him really well with that character. I wish we would have gotten to see his in-real-life avatar, though, at some point. Yeah. You know, we never got to see him.
Deleted scenes.
It would have been that World of Warcraft Blu-ray. Guy in the basement, right? But we never got to see him.
Tell me, I cheated a little bit, and I asked Reiner this morning to tell me his favorite, like, reference.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite?
Great question. I was going to ask this as well. You know what it was? I mean, there is one that is the best, but, like, in terms of, like, deep cuts, I didn't expect, but I probably should have. It was... seeing a Last Action Hero reference, so there's like Jack Slater.
I didn't even see that.
Is in the background in one of the shots, but Zach Penn, the screenwriter, he also wrote Last Action Hero. So that kind of makes sense.
There's so much stuff like just hidden. Like I saw books in Wade's room.
Yeah.
Like I think there was like a reference to Schindler's List, no joke, in that room.
What? Shut up.
I think there was a Schindler's Ark book, which was the basis for the movie, in Wade's room. I'm not even.
Oh my God, Spielberg.
And I don't know for sure. I thought I saw that.
Yeah.
So, because I was looking. Like, you're looking all the time.
You're constantly looking.
To a distracting degree, yeah.
I liked the crawl showing up.
Explain what a crawl is.
Okay, so there's a movie called Crawl that's about this like bladed glaive thing.
Oh, that's why you laughed at that.
Yeah.
Miller and I were like losing
it. We were totally losing at that because we both love Crawl for all its insanity. And in that movie, there's a dude who, you know, his like thing that he's got, like the big weapon he's got to get is this glaive that's this spinning boomerang blade thing that he flings out and it comes back to him.
Yeah.
And so there's one point, like a pivotal moment where they're going up against one of the bad guys, where one of the heroes goes into his inventory and pulls out the glaive from Krull and like flings it out.
And then seconds later, they use a mad ball too.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the best.
What's a mad ball was crazy to see. I was like, I haven't seen one of those in 40
years. Right?
What is it?
That was a little
it was like a little toy.
Toy
that you'd squeeze and the eyes would pop out.
It was supposed to be like all gross and monstery and stuff.
Yeah. Like parents hated it because they were gross.
Okay.
It sat alongside Garbage Pail Kids.
I know that. Okay.
As
so,
like a gross out like collecting thing.
I was barely alive in the 80s. So the other thing right before that that's more gamer focused is they had the Lancer from Gears of War.
Yeah.
That he's firing with. And it also played like hinted at the Gears of War theme. Did you catch that, Miller?
The
like
music in the soundtrack? In this film was incredible, by the way.
Yeah. Constant
the way
it would musical shift. References.
It was so good.
But, like when they use the Zemeckis cube and it blows up and they have like the little Back to the Future, like hints in there. For like, what an honor for Zemeckis to get like the fucking cube named after him.
I mean, in a lot of ways, the movie plays like the way you would play with toys when you were seven, right? Like the idea that you're like, okay, I got this guy from Toy Story, and I got this Transformer, and I've got this Star Wars figure. And I've got my sister's My Little Pony over here, and they're all like, they're in a fight. They're all gonna like,
yes.
Like, but when you're Spielberg and no one says no, then that movie just happens.
And then that movie happens, and there's lots of scenes in this movie that are just like different variations of that toy battle.
Yes,
there's a race.
That race was so fun.
It was great.
There's a dance, like a mid-air dance scene.
That nightclub was awesome.
Like just really crazy. Awesome.
Design-wise, through the roof.
Very
I think
effect.
In one sequence, I saw, like one shot, I saw it began with like a Geonosian bug from Attack of the Clones, and then I saw three Hello Kitty characters, and then I saw Freddy Krueger, and I was just like, this is bonkers. And those were just like three of like 150 characters on screen.
It's constant, but at the same point, I do want to make the statement, like, you don't have to be sitting there.
No, but that's part of the fun.
It's super part of the fun, but like a lot of people I think who have trepidation about seeing the movie are like gonna be like, oh man, well, I didn't grow up in the 80s or I don't get any of these references.
You'll get a lot of them.
And speaking of references, I think the best one in the entire movie, I mean, it's more of an overarching thing than a character, but it's definitely the Shining sequence.
Oh my god! Like this is what I'm excited to talk about.
The Shining is the best sequence in the entire movie.
Absolutely.
And it's the best surprise, right? It's the best surprise of the movie, and the way that they handle it and find a way to make it comedic by taking one of the sort of side characters who hasn't seen The Shining, and then having him like experience the moments of The Shining firsthand.
Oh, I'm so happy they didn't spoil any of this nonsense, but even like the theater... Where it's like Shining, like in a modern movie theater. I don't know what percentage of the audience has seen it, but like the theater lost its fucking mind during that Shining stuff. Hey, it was so much fun.
Leo, have you seen The Shining?
Yes, I love it.
Okay,
because Leo, you were reacting very strongly when that Shining started, and I'm like, I don't know if he hates this or he just is scared of it or what your reaction was there.
I mean, if you've seen The Shining, how can you didn't get any like titillating fun out of that? Like,
you guys want to hear a 100% true note I have here?
Yes.
I didn't truly hate this movie until the Shining sequence.
It's the best scene in the movie.
Okay, to be fair to Leo, the idea of recreating like scenes from The Shining, incredible. Where I had that little cynic within me bubble up is like turning the elevator of blood into like a whoa, like slippy slide action scene is like holy shit. You
guys, river rafting.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It really is.
Leo, is that the kind of stuff that rubbed you the wrong way?
Yeah. I'm normally not like a stickler about reboots or whatever, you know, the original's still going to live on and be fine no matter what people do with it nowadays, but to take like a true classic piece of art by a dead filmmaker and do a YouTube spoof of it truly made me sad.
It's so weird to think of like...
Dude, we're not pissing on the Mona Lisa here, man.
Well, damn close to it.
It's about as close as you can get in a filmmaking.
I just don't see it that way. I see that kind of stuff as being a tribute to how great that movie was.
And Spielberg,
and finding a way to put it through the lens of this new comedic moment.
It's like a 15-minute sequence. Yeah, it's crazy.
I see both takes on that. Like... He's gone. You know, like, yeah.
What would Stanley Kubrick say?
it doesn't matter what he would say. The work is out there.
Yeah.
That's
true.
I mean, it's a sort of highfalutin word to bring out here, but this is ultimately, like the book was, it's a piece of postmodern fiction. Right?
You said fiction instead of art. Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, that's what that stuff does, is it takes existing, it does the same thing that like Braid did with Super Mario, right? It uses existing cultural understandings to say something new, right? Yeah. And
what it had to say that was new was the spooky bathroom zombie lady.
Dude, you have
the action scene with her with a knife. And to be fair, this was my favorite part of the movie. I thought it was absolutely amazing, but there were those moments of like, what the hell are you doing? Where it's like the crazy scene that scared me more than any other in The Shining when
it's
I first watched it, of like the skin melting lady in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Turning her into like this action serial killer with the knife and then the axe at the end and the hedgerow. It's like, what the hell?
It worked, man. Because you got to think. Okay?
Man.
Think about this. Like, as crazy and weird as this thing is with all the VR and stuff like that, it's not inconceivable that our future goes this way. At all.
You're totally right.
You're right. Yeah. That tech is confusing and troublesome. But it's just crazy that in this movie that is all about being a big old nerd, especially for games, that the best reference or best Easter egg, it's beyond an Easter
the
egg.
The biggest Easter egg.
Is The Shining. I never saw it coming.
I think your point, Dan, is important here, right? Which is that like I think the movie does a really good job of walking this line between acknowledging the fun of all this stuff and not necessarily like coming down on it in a way that would feel preachy or like annoying, especially to those of us who care a lot about pop culture stuff. But at the same time, it is ultimately sort of it's a dystopian story, right?
It is
a story about like how escapism can go too far, right? Where at some point things have gone off the rails, and this is all people care about.
I hope nobody ever disrespects The Shining like this. Wow. Scary future.
Like,
that's right. Like, none of your favorite works of art will be safe when we could go in and change anything.
Exactly. The Shining, Leo. The book by Stephen King adapted into a movie by Stanley Kubrick.
Best-selling book.
This part wasn't in The Shining.
I think there's a lot of stuff in the movie that... you know, does a good job of bringing out these fun moments and these fun scenes that we all have happy memories about, but also sort of constantly bringing us back to this real world where things are really kind of like screwed up And
yeah,
and that the movie chooses to deal with that. I think it would be a lot easier for the movie to kind of be just like, you know, it's just crazy. Like, everybody loves the Oasis and it's the greatest thing ever. Or on the other end, coming out at the end, like, I was worried that at the end of this movie, it was going to come out and be like, oh, virtual reality and games and having fun, that's all terrible. Like, right. We all need to constantly be, like, in the thick of reality.
And it seemed to be veering that way a little bit.
It did. And then it pulls back by the end and walks a middle path, yeah. Which I really appreciate.
For
about
sure.
It.
Loved it. Yep. It's pretty wild. The real world connection, that's kind of a bummer moment, is like when H first brought up, like, you don't even know what this person looks like in the real world. It's like a little homophobic. Everyone's like, it could be a dude. Yeah. But it actually ended up paying off for having that twist of him being a her and all that stuff. But then I was still bummed out when I saw Artemis for the first time. It's like, okay, it's just a smoking hot chick who happens to have like a birthmark. Like,
birthmark.
Have some nerve and like make it an unattractive person, or make it like a morbidly obese person that you then learn to love. Like, that's a cool move, not smoking hot chick with a thing on her eye.
8% of her face stained.
Yeah, that's like, who the hell cares? That's not a message. Okay, other references. I lost my mind. I have a whole list of crap that I vaguely remember, but I think it's fun focusing on the gaming stuff. Specifically, the idea that there is like a back and forth exchange in a Spielberg movie about gameplay modes within GoldenEye, and they reference slappers only. Like, what the
That was weird.
A deep cut.
That was super
That's
deep cut.
That's the main GoldenEye reference.
That was a super deep cut. It was a weird scene. Like, if anything, I do take issue with in the film. Like, you know, it wasn't perfect. Like, so definitely some of the dialogue was a little hammy, even for this movie. Like,
not practicing my Mario Kart up here.
This movie moved fast, though.
It does.
It had a lot of ground to cover, and for them to take a moment like that to focus on an N64 game, I thought was really cool, and it spoke specifically to gamers in the crowd.
Absolutely.
But the last act, they were just going through. It was like a replay episode of Atari 2600 games.
Yeah, which was really awesome.
I was just losing my mind where they kept calling out names. Yeah. And you saw like a dry erase board, like all the Atari games.
They're literally like throwing around the Atari cartridges.
It was awesome.
Since we can play the gamer card more than most here, like, did anything, like Tack mentioned with the dialogue, did anything bump you guys as like cool it, or they didn't quite stick the landing on the gamer front?
The stuff that is, there's plenty of groan-worthy stuff. I don't mean to imply that it's like, oh yeah, they totally got it. Like, that's not it. It's that like the stuff that is grown worthy for me, it's just more of the fun, right? It's more like,
so
for
lines
instance,
like fanboys know a hater.
Like, stuff like that is just so like silly and over the top. Or like there's
I don't think they treat it that way though.
I don't care. Okay. I mean, like,
right. It's the right approach.
That, like, or it's generalized for everyone to understand, where you're just, as a gamer, you're like, you don't say it that way.
Yeah, you don't say it that way. There's one point that just to get it in there, they reference Twitch.
I saw our Twitch stream.
I watch all her Twitch streams, and I'm just like,
yeah, that was pretty funny.
So dumb.
Why would there be Twitch streams in a world where there's only one game and everyone owns it?
Totally dumb. And yet I was just kind of on board. I was like, you know what? It's fine.
Where it bumped me was it's like, they should have just called this movie Ready Player One: Return of the Battletoads, because Battletoads were everywhere.
I only saw them once.
Oh,
they
were all over the place.
I saw them once, but I saw Tracer three times.
Tracer shows up a lot.
From Overwatch.
She's, I think, you know, the reason we all saw Tracer is because she's really like visible. She's really bright and like stands out.
Also, Jim Raynor gets full frontal there's a lot of Jim Raynor.
There's a lot of Master Chief and the Spartans.
Tons of Master
Microsoft
Chief.
Making that deal. But Minecraft in the very beginning.
There's a big Minecraft moment.
He does a Hadouken.
He does a Hadouken. Like, just out of nowhere, like without referencing Street Fighter specifically.
Right.
He just does a Hadouken.
But to be fair, as I was building
Blanca and Chun-Li are dancing in the club.
Oh, that's right. That's so cute.
I saw Ryu, by the way.
I was so excited for they're gonna do the Kamehameha. Holy S, they're doing a Kamehameha. It's like, Hadouken, the wannabe Kamehameha. Okay, I guess that's
close enough.
Situation,
But again, I think you can go through that movie with a fine-tooth comb and find so much stuff that we missed, because a lot of it, especially, a lot of those references are just packed into the last battle scene.
Sonic doing the spin dash in the last battle scene.
I didn't see that.
You're going to be like, pause, oh, there's that guy. Pause, oh, there's that one.
Yeah, it's done so well.
It's absurd.
It really is.
And even
the absurdity of that final battle. The whole, Mechagodzilla thing.
It is
I
totally absurd.
I had no idea how that was going to translate to film. And you know what? They nailed it.
The fact that they had a Gundam jump out of Serenity. Jesus Christ. Okay, on that front of just weird combos, one of the things, I think the part that got me where I said, oh no, or Jesus Christ, whatever, sitting next to Miller was when the Iron Giant did the Terminator 2 death. I was
as
like,
he's going to the lava.
It's like, yeah. this is where I've hit my limit. Like, I'm as dorky as can be. I love both those things. And for some reason, seeing them together should be a delight, but it's like, come on. It was a little too much.
I don't know. I mean, for me, if there was going to be a point of that, it would have happened so early in the movie. Sure. Because they
was it when the alien chestburster popped out of Goro?
Yeah, that was nice. It's stuff like that, right? Like, I mean, they broadcast what this movie's going to be. That opening fly through when you first go into the Oasis,
yeah,
should really make it clear what you're in for, right?
Yes.
Because you're going through all these different kind of created worlds and so rapidly moving past any one, yeah, and on to the next that. It's almost an aggregate becomes, yes, you're understanding some of the references at any one moment, but as a film watching experience, it's ultimately saying something about pop culture, right? It's saying that, like, pop culture has hit a point that there is just so much of it that in some sense it has become kind of meaningless. Right? Like that this is just all this stuff and you can't possibly digest it all or take meaning from all of it. Like any given shot of Ready Player One is sort of sending that message, right? And so you have all these different people who have different things that they love that they're trying to represent with their weapons and their characters and their avatars, yeah, and their vehicles. And at the end of the day, it's all kind of just like, it's kind of nonsense.
So you're saying it's working the opposite message more than we think of pop culture is ultimately meaningless. Forget all this popcorn.
I don't think it goes that far. I just think it's saying that like everybody is struggling to like have their own story and have something to identify with. And that in a world that is this like covered in pop culture.
Yeah.
You grasp for the things that maybe would say something about yourself,
yeah,
right? Like, we're Star Wars fans because it says something about us as people that we like Star Wars,
the
right?
The big message is it's okay to be who you want to be,
yeah,
right? Whether that's you projecting yourself or if you want to be someone else, that's totally cool in the Oasis. I thought that was awesome. But the one thing is that was forbidden was revealing who you really are in the real world.
Right.
Like, that's where you get in trouble.
Don't say your real name in any,
exactly,
in any case. Speaking of real world, if I were to get into a fight in the Oasis, step one, don't buy a haptic suit. How would you be hurt if you didn't buy the suit? He puts on this suit just so you can get kicked in the nuts. It's, yeah, like, this is the dumbest crap.
But it's like, okay, I could have sex and it would be amazing.
Yeah. I guess,
or there's a chance I could get kicked in the nuts, right, and that'd be terrible.
I guess so. But just that tech, like when he's in the van, it was basically the robot Labo suit,
yeah,
where he's got all the strings and cords. Or like, I don't understand how any of this nonsense is working.
It was great.
Greatest.
How are they floating
film
around doing the dancing? What did that look like in the real world?
You are
world
officially crossing the threshold into thinking about it too much.
That's what dorks do. This movie's made for dorks. You have to have it make like a little bit of sense.
All I hear is this is the greatest film of all time.
I've actually grown on it even like since watching, you know, when I said like I liked it. I actually like it more now that I've had time to digest it.
Yeah. Me too.
Is it just a rebuttal against Leo?
I'm actually surprised that Leo hates fun, to be honest with you.
And you know, Leo's perspective is really interesting to me because I think you actually probably know a lot more of these references than you're fessing up to, right?
Yeah, I got a lot.
I mean, you got a lot of it. But that said, I don't think a lot of it was stuff that you have a special nostalgia for, right?
Sure.
Oh, Leo,
it's fair to say.
Hey,
well,
Leo,
he has too much nostalgia for The Shining, apparently.
Leo, the big ape you saw, that's King Kong.
But the T-Rex wasn't the Jurassic Park T-Rex because
it
roared differently.
Did you know that the DeLorean is from Back to the Future?
What is Back to the Future?
You need your Zemeckis cube to find out.
I watched some shaky iPhone footage of Spielberg introducing this movie at South by Southwest. And he says, the windshield for this movie is for the story. The side windows are for the references. That's how he framed it.
And I agree with
that. You can keep your eyes on the prize.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
That's what we were kind of talking about before, right? That like the pop culture stuff, there's so much of it that at some point it you can look for it and you can pause the frames and we will. Right. But that's not what this movie's about.
The stuff if, in
the whole thing yeah. just felt different. Like it had a different pace, a different yeah. tone. I loved it.
You have yeah. to give it up that this movie got made. It's just crazy,
which is astonishing. Yeah. And again, that was my concern, right? I was like, you yeah. cannot adapt this book. It will never work.
The other thing we talked about how it will age. I think one of the I think it does probably suffer from age in 5-10 years. But one thing it won't suffer from. Is some of the digital work in the Oasis, right?
Yeah, look
is,
great.
Is like, because it is presented as an online virtual world, it can age just fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, for instance, like Avatar, the movie Avatar, in some ways, the further away from that for that original movie we get, the more the CG of the character faces starts to be like, eh,
yeah.
that's not so great. Like, the Uncanny Valley issue stuff starts to really hit home. Whereas in this movie, that stuff won't have that same effect because ultimately you're talking about all that stuff plays out in a virtual play space.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's stylized.
It's all
sure.
stylized.
Yeah. I thought about Avatar a lot. It's weird. And we don't know how this movie's going to do when we're recording this. Obviously, yeah. it's not out yet and whatnot. I mean, I don't know how it's going to do at the box office, but it's just crazy to think of like Avatar. It's all about escapism. Tomorrowland, not that long ago, I also thought a lot about just like the weird one-to-one life. Yeah. It also vibes with the Matrix, like weird escapism trend in Hollywood, and maybe it'll do well.
This is a movie that more specifically is about escapism as
right.
a concept and a theme.
Exactly.
Whereas some of those other movies you're referencing are escapist fare, right?
Right. Okay.
Right.
But they're not necessarily about that concept.
Yeah, yeah.
This is simultaneously escapist fare because it is crazy, you know, sci-fi races and battles and stuff like that. But it is also talking about that concept.
Yeah. Leo, any other nitpicks you want to bring up that we haven't gotten to yet? Have you been able to vent enough?
I have a list of specifically nitpicks if we want to get into it.
Oh, yes, please.
Reiner, do you have to get here? Do you want to swap
I do.
For Leo?
Yeah.
Okay, we can do that. All right. Reiner's got a place to be. Leo, come out here and get nitpicky. Let's go. Let's really dive
Thanks,
into
Reiner.
This dorky
yeah,
nonsense. Bye, Reiner. Okay, Leo, list of nitpicks. Because your reactions were all over the place.
What is going on? Leo, are you trolling me right now?
Yeah.
Did you really?
I'm the
no,
ultimate gamer.
For real, like, you really thought this movie sucked?
Yeah.
Go on. Go on.
But
the floor
I
is
think
yours.
There's an important qualifier, which is Leo is the funniest person, second funniest maybe to Jeff Quirk in The Office. And I feel like there's something about that comedian cynical heart where you look at this movie differently. You look at it from a sarcastic point of view.
I won't deny it's easy to make fun of.
Okay, thank you. That's
but before we get
at.
Into the nitpicks, my core problems were really just the story didn't progress in a way I liked and the characters I didn't find interesting.
Okay.
And
it focused
level,
more on
it.
That than you'd think by the end, to the point of like, just go back to throwing crap at my face, please.
Yeah, give me some crap. So when they had this big reveal that, oh, we've got to play Adventure, mm-hmm. most famous Atari game by far. Why would they not pick that until 20 in when some genius in the office thinks of it?
Well, because it's
know,
like
there's
40
years
in
the future. There's other
I don't know if that's
Atari
the most famous
games.
Atari game. I don't know
they
that
they talk
that,
about like
at all.
Pitfall first, which is a more famous
Pong.
Atari game.
Shut up, baby boy, Leo.
All right, they never would have thought
Let's
of Adventure.
Let's keep going.
All right, keep
they
going.
Did. It was on the board. They were going
yeah,
to get to it.
Yeah, they got there.
Eventually. Good thing Z randomly made a bet in passing with that robot butler.
Yeah,
said, I bet you this.
Yeah.
Just throwaway line.
So in the
Look,
book.
Won the whole movie.
In the book, he gets the coin a different way.
Okay, never mind.
But
then.
I actually. I thought the introduction of the robot curator character, I really enjoyed him, actually.
I thought it was kind of funny, yeah. and it's yeah. nice that I guess it had a deeper meaning ultimately. Weird that they were like recreating these scenes from his life. It was cool how it was shot, where it's like live action, but it was like rotating the camera.
Can
like
I
that?
Pause for a second and yeah. say that that reminds me that maybe the best part of this movie for me is Halliday. I loved Halliday.
I also loved
Garth. He was
good. Like, I thought he was really fantastic.
Like, he's so great. Like, I think some of us have met some of the video game developers who that character is probably loosely based on. We won't name any
There's
names
Silicon
here.
Valley.
Yeah, there's but, no need to put any names out
but,
there.
But we've all met some guys who work in game development who are maybe not socially, like, the life of the party,
right?
And Halliday is so endearing here, and it's such a great way about him, especially that last
totally.
Scene you have with him
yeah.
where we're in his childhood room.
Yes.
We see him at the end of his life and very early on his life and the sort of overwhelming loneliness of the character. But with the sort of like wistful humor about him.
He was much funnier than you'd expect.
He's
yeah.
just so great in every scene that we see him in. in both being fun to watch, but also like, you know, you like him, despite himself, right?
Sure.
You really like that guy.
What did he say? He had a good line too when Artemis got the key and she said like, sorry about Kira. And he had a good, just quick, like, I don't know, just like cutting her off.
He doesn't respond. Like,
he just tells her to keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's still, even in this AI manifestation of his own personality, is still like, he can't face it.
I didn't understand the puzzle about signing the paper at the end. It's like, you chose not to do the thing you came here to do, therefore you win. It's like, did that have a deeper meaning than I understood? I got the part about the business partner, but it's like, just because he happened to sign a contract at some point?
I think it's the idea of like this guy taking sole ownership over a thing.
That's a big test.
It plays into the whole anti-authoritarian vibe that you've got there, right, that underlying everything.
I don't know if you know that Phil Spencer guy, he wanted money, Tack. Weren't you paying attention?
Yeah, I love that he's the Phil Spencer guy to you.
You know what? And it's really cool because I really like the, you know, that I'm thinking about the interaction between him and IROC, which didn't exist in the book, is really key. They play off each other so well for comedic effect as the two bad guys. It's just like, I really, really like their dialogue. Like,
it's fun,
Their other ham-fisted, crappy stuff on the good guy side, I guess, didn't play. But when they were being stupid, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable. Anyway, Leo.
I'm sorry, Leo has a long list. He's got a declaration.
Yeah, let's get back to the things that suck.
No, take your time. So, you know, you can turn your brain off or whatever, but...
No one actually advocated for that, by the way.
Yeah, Leo, go ahead.
You should turn your brain off. But it was a lot of things happening very consistently that I couldn't really let them go because it was kind of the whole movie.
Yeah, okay.
For example, what were the rules about playing the game? Some people play on an omnidirectional treadmill. Some people jump around their living room and their couch is actually an object in the game.
Right. I like the idea of some of the people being actually out on the street where they're just literally going to walk out into the street and get run over.
And they're all in the same formation.
Leo,
they die like in the same group.
And their avatars had like facial expressions perfectly for like their cheeks and their mouths where it's like, wait, is it reading everything? Like the tech was a disaster. I wish they would have focused exactly how that crap worked a little bit more.
Leo, have you ever seen a fantasy film? You know, where they had dragons and wizards and stuff? Like, not necessarily stuff that you could do outside.
But yeah, this is about magic. But a magic game.
This is based on, like, tech, where they're just, like, going for, like, all right, let's go for an Oculus visor.
A non-existent tech, yes.
But it looks so close to the tech we have now.
We call that science fiction.
It's fine if it has consistent rules and it doesn't have one consistent
rule. Put them in some goop in their room. You know, that
does
just
Lord
floating.
Of the Rings have
it wasn't consistent.
Right. That's it.
With the tech. I'll give you that.
All right.
The aunt's boyfriend was the dad from The Vitch. I thought that was funny, seeing him in this role.
I reckon it's from The Office, The British Office, but yeah.
There you go. How was H right outside when...
That was really funny. Where she sends the text and instantaneously the whole team is together.
Right.
That was really funny. Yeah.
That was funny. What was there a reason why he was watching that specific video of Halliday cleaning up after the office party to give him the clue that he instantly tied to?
Because he knew that it was juicy
puzzle?
In some way.
I think that one actually, there's a reason for it. Because for one, it's a specific moment that he knows about, and so he's going back to that scene because he knows that's where it was discussed. I mean, the idea is that all these people treat Halliday almost like a messianic figure, right? Where they're following the words that he said in his life with a conviction and almost like a religious ferocity, right?
Because it's more clear, I think, in the book, but like you have to know, that's why they have
a team
of scholars to try to figure out how to win this game,
but
by knowing everything about him.
But, you know, I think in the movie they at least get across that idea that there are people, especially because of the egg hunt, there's people who have devoted their lives to figuring it out, and they think the key correctly think ultimately that the key lies in understanding Halliday's life. And so when Wade wants to figure that clue out, he recalls that one moment and goes back to the archives to see that moment.
I was just confused about the specific moment of all the moments in his life.
Yeah.
Is that where he mentioned Kira? I think that was where he mentioned Kira.
No, well, he mentioned Kira when they're in the office together,
before they launched
the game.
Okay.
He's talking about the race one.
Yeah. The race one, bringing up knowing gamers and knowing gaming and knowing that every platformer I start I try and run backwards or run to the left first. The idea that like no one had tried to, go backwards on that race, that's like that's gamer tactic number one.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Because if you crash into the wall
in a racing game,
it would cost absolutely in a racing game.
You don't have to go so fast. I don't know why I was going so fast.
You do. Otherwise, it doesn't trigger.
Well, you can just test.
You got
to
go really fast for it to trigger.
I feel like gamers would have figured that out. Gamers would have figured that out.
All right.
Okay, Leo.
He did say really fast. Fair point.
It's a leap of faith. Penitent man may pass. Indiana Jones kind of thing.
You got to take the leap, you guys.
Exactly.
Why weren't any of the scenes good I have written down here?
All right, that's it.
Okay, so here's
you're
the thing.
An
I'm sorry.
Here's where I take issue. I feel like at some point in this, you literally decided that this movie was so worthy of hating that you were gonna break out your phone and just start looking for things to like hate on.
Tell
me I'm wrong.
We did discuss the Shining part, but I only broke this out after the film.
Okay.
We had some time to kill because they had a VR Q&A.
Definitely had some time to kill.
One lady got up in the audience and asked one of the VR experts who like just works on like architectural software. She goes, "Do you think we're living in a simulation?" A
couple people laugh.
To be honest, that was the best question
and
that
then,
I asked.
Yeah, a couple people laugh, and then she goes, "I'm serious." I like that doubling down. It's a good move.
Not allowed to laugh at that question.
All right, Leo, do you got any more?
It's insanely easy to escape an IOI prisoner pod. If you think to feel around for a release lever, you'll find it in 30 seconds.
What?
It's right there.
Okay, so you're like giving your life away to...
But theoretically, they would zap you because they'd see you doing non-correct behavior in the virtual world unless you absolutely knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
Why were people signing up for that?
Well, you weren't signing up for it. It's that they would buy up your debt.
Okay.
Right, because you would build up debt both in the virtual world and the real world, right?
Sure.
And then if they wanted to, if you were like a dissident, for instance, or you were saying something they didn't like or whatever, then this big company, the equivalent, like the much more villainous version of like a Microsoft.
Right.
Right. Would buy up your debt and thus put you into indentured servitude to them. And they would then put you to work in the Oasis doing their dirty work.
Okay. Yep.
So that's how you'd become one of the, you know.
The IOI. Good name, by the way, IOI.
Yeah, that's a good bad guy name. Right?
They made Hitman.
What's that?
They made Hitman.
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, yeah, the best game of all time.
That's right. Fully modeled societies. Follow up. So there's escape levers when you're in the prisoner pod.
Right.
Okay.
But if you're an employee for the company, there's no way to get yourself out unless someone kills you. Which Wade does
what
heroically.
Do you
You'll thank
just
me
take
later.
The
no, no, no.
Off.
Wait.
Why did he have to kill her then?
You misinterpreted that scene completely. Oh my God. All right. So he kills her.
Lay it out.
So he kills her so she reads out. So he's only looking for people who are actively playing because she's in the game.
Right.
So when she's dead, he dismisses her.
She wouldn't have taken her headset off.
Yeah, she wasn't willing to leave. And so he forced the issue by shooting her
right.
and getting her to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel
Grow
like that
up,
one's
dude.
Just
Come
like,
on. Yes. Boo, Leo,
very
boo.
Smart.
He's just looking for anything.
This is all stuff that occurred to me during the film and bothered me.
You can come up with more. Certainly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Part two?
No.
Go on.
Perhaps Ready Player Two. Let's... Leo, did you have a problem with like the core amount of nostalgia? Forget like, you know, storytelling nitpicks here and there. Did you have a core issue with like this is too much nostalgia?
I appreciate nostalgia as an emotion that makes you feel good and it's worth pursuing.
Yeah.
In this real world. And just the way that it was approached, I didn't get any of the extra subtext that Miller's gone into in this discussion.
It's very
just
smart.
Just from watching the film, I didn't find any kind of meaning in what they showed. It felt very reference after reference after reference.
It was just like, you know, when Star-Lord makes a quip and references the 80s, imagine that for 2 hours.
Right.
That's what I thought. I'm like, boy, people like those moments in Marvel movies. What about 2 hours
two
of
hours
those
of
moments?
It, where it's just constant. You can't keep track of them all.
Yeah.
In deference to Leo's concerns here, I definitely...
these aren't concerns.
You don't have to take this little bit more seriously.
I think some of the nitpicky stuff where you're trying to do... where you're trying to, like, bring real-world stuff... to what's ultimately a fantasy sci-fi movie. That maybe I'm not totally on board with you there, but I can totally identify and even at times feel the same way as you do that there's times that it's just sort of stupid, right?
Sure.
Like there's parts of this movie that are
dopey.
Just,
I think is
yeah,
a good word.
It's
dopey
just sort of it's just sort of like there's times it's like well that's just a dumb line. I mean like that's just dumb. It's just like. Do make a better script there, right?
That's or make a camper move,
right? Yeah, stuff like that where it's just like.
But that is totally what IROC would say.
Okay, all right.
To be
right.
fair,
okay.
Having known a good number of griefers in my day.
Yeah, inside and out.
So I don't know. I mean, I get where you're coming from there. I think I was I think maybe it's a frame of mind thing a little bit of like how you're, where you're coming into the movie with and what you're willing to like laugh off and enjoy.
Sure.
Rather than like, then it just like bothers you. And it seems like a lot of it's just really bothered you.
Yeah. I mean, to reiterate, these nitpicks are just me having fun. They're not right. why I dislike
you
the movie.
You had a broader dislike of just like the structure of the movie.
Right. It was just, there weren't moments that stuck out to me as like good or clever.
Leo, have you seen The Goonies by chance?
Yes.
Okay. Did you like that one?
Sure. It's fine.
I just,
it's the same thing.
It's not the same thing, but like a lot of the heart, I think, is in both. There's very Spielberg elements. I
like how they kiss at the end. That was hot.
That was hot. It was weird to see Spielberg. Normally, like, he gets a lot of crap for being too, you know, schmarmy, schmaltzy over kind of Americana, okay. You know, in American sure. history. And it's just weird to have that same tone and that affection and I think sincerity from Spielberg shifted towards pop culture in the 80s. It's just a bizarre disconnect.
And games.
Yeah,
it's very important. Like, the gaming element here is enormous.
There's an unabashed enthusiasm and willingness to just embrace that stuff. That once again is what works about the movie for me. I think it would have been way easy to turn this into a just like screw all that stuff. It's all just like stupid.
Right.
And they didn't do that here
for sure.
But they also don't say that like that's the be all end all. There is something about. That the movie's speaking to about that stuff gets great and it's fun. It's fun to get away and to transport yourself to another world. But there is something else, and it's like, you know,
and it's
living
really,
life.
It's about the reality, like sitting at this podcast table with some coworkers.
Yeah, you know,
and best
I learned something.
What's better than this?
I learned something really important today. Like I thought Leo only had terrible taste in games, not just in movies as well.
Full of surprises.
A lesson you can take home with you. Thank you so much for everyone that watched or listened to this special edition of the Game Informer Show podcast. We appreciate you tuning in. Be sure to tune in next Thursday. We'll have a new episode waiting for you.
Whoa.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Well, technology is a glittering lure, but there's the rare occasion when the public can be engaged on a level beyond flash if they have a sentimental bond with the product. My first job, I was in-house at a fur company with this old pro copywriter, Greek, named Teddy. And Teddy told me the most important idea in advertising is new. Creates an itch. You simply put your product in there as a kind of calamine lotion. But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product. Nostalgia. It's delicate, but potent. Sweetheart. Teddy told me that in Greek, nostalgia literally means the pain from an old wound. It's a twinge in your heart, far more powerful than memory alone. This device isn't a spaceship. It's a time machine. Goes backwards and forwards. It takes us to a place where we ache to go again. It's not called the wheel. It's called the carousel. Let's just travel the way a child travels. Around and around, and back home again. To a place where we know we are loved.
Good luck at your next meeting.